We begin.
Yes, how am I showing up?
Oh, you look fine.
Okay.
No worries on that end.
Okay.
Any questions about the project or anything like that?
I don't know anything about the project. I looked at the website, and I couldn't figure out what it was about, really.
Okay. Well, it's no excuses website. It tends to look like a disability website, but that's actually just sort of a symptom of it, because the reason that I talk primarily to people who have disabilities is because these are people with the best excuses in the world who aren't using them. So anybody else who has some sort of an excuse for why they can't do something, these are examples of why it doesn't need to be the case.
Right. Okay.
So I'm just going to ask you about what you do. It's fascinating to me, and we'll just go about 10 minutes, and then we're done.
Okay. Very good.
Excellent. Hey, everybody. It's Johnny B. Truant with the Badass Project. I am here today with Daniel Kish, and I am absolutely fascinated to talk to Daniel. I actually ran across somebody who can do what he can do when the Badass Project was just sort of an idea. And I'm really excited to hear about what he can do. So, Daniel, you've been blind since you were the age of one, correct?
Yes. I was 13 months old when I lost the second eye.
And since then, you've essentially learned to see again, correct? Not with your eyes.
Yes. If we redefine seeing just a little bit, and we say that seeing occurs in the brain and not necessarily exclusively in the eye, then yes, the brain is able to see, is able to actually extract and construct images using sound.
Now, it's going to be a little difficult for me to ask you some of these questions if you don't remember what it was like to see with eyes, but I'm trying to get an idea of what that would be like. I mean, what kind of granularity can you get on the objects in your environment?
Well, first of all, it's strictly a matter of spatial relationships. So, for example, there is no color whatsoever. There is no grayscale. There is no concept of color, if you will. It is strictly a matter of the spatial relationship of elements in the environment. So everything that exists either takes up space or doesn't take up space. And the taking up of space generally necessitates some kind of a shape, some kind of a layout, and some set of features, be they textural or related to density, etc. And those are the elements that sonar can register. With regard to human sonar, the resolution really depends, well, the resolution, I guess, to put it very, very simply, maybe about the size of a softball, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You can get better than that under highly controlled conditions, in an anechoic chamber, et cetera, you can get down to, you know, resolutions of a quarter. But for practical purposes, you're looking at objects essentially about the size of a softball.
So is there a way you can sort of demonstrate, because you mentioned it, I actually didn't do that correctly and explain exactly how it is that you're able to see, but it's through what you call flash sonar, which is echolocation, essentially what a bat does.
Yes. So you are emitting flashes of sound, and those flashes go out and they encounter surfaces in the environment. When they encounter these surfaces, they are reflected. We call that an echo.
Mm-hmm.
And the sound waves are actually physical. I mean, even though we cannot see sound waves, we can measure them. They are the displacement of a medium, air or water, and being physical, they actually return with a kind of imprint, if you will, of whatever they encountered. And the auditory system can extract information from those imprints and then code that information and transmit that information to the visual cortex, which is where the image is actually formed. So, of course, recently we've done research using fMRI, and we've seen the visual cortex functioning and in action in this imaging process.
That's absolutely amazing. How do you begin to teach this? Because the description that I just read in Men's Journal article on you mentioned that you mountain bike and do all these other things, and I'm imagining in an urban environment and traffic, mountain biking, whatever, that it would be difficult to locate all those small sounds in the auditory jumble that is our world.
The process can certainly be complicated by circumstances, mm-hmm. But the experience allows one to cope, if you will, with complication. I mean, so when it's raining, people still drive, even though you have water coursing down your windshield, even though you can only see, you know, you tell me how far you can see, people are still driving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably not safe, it's probably not ideal, but they still do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you learn to adapt, you learn to cope, you learn to make the most out of minimal information. So as the noise levels rise, as the complexity of the environment rises, a person using sonar may be challenged by that, but as their sensitivity thresholds increase, and as their experience extracting, processing, and comprehending information increases, you're able to make more and more out of less and less information. As far as how long it takes to teach, that really depends on the student. It can be, our typical scenario is that we spend 2 or 3 days with a student, and then we follow up with consultations as needed, and we plan a follow-up visit if and when necessary. Sometimes it is mm-hmm. necessary, sometimes it isn't.
So when I'm curious if you've run across students who used to have vision and lost it, so they have experience both seeing with eyes and seeing using sonar. I'm curious if you've gotten any reports as to the feeling of it, if it begins to feel like visual sight to them or not?
Well, certainly they do often express that. There is a piece on our website called Moving On, and it's about a woman named Sean Marcellet who received training from me in Canada, and this training was documented. And in one of our exercises, we have her using her developing skill of flash sonar to look at a car. And I didn't tell her that it was a car, although I'm sure that she could gather that from context. But what I actually had her do is I had her trace the outline of the car with her hand without actually touching the car. So she'd have to use her clicks to edge detect the contours of the car and then, you know, kind of use her hand to hover over the contour of the car without actually tracing it tactfully. And this is actually within her first session, and it was probably no more than 2 hours after she and I got started. And she did this, and then she exclaimed that she could actually see the car. Now, this is a woman who still has some degree of residual vision. She was under blindfold doing this particular exercise. But when she was younger, she had quite a degree of useful vision. She was never fully sighted, but she had a lot of useful vision. Other students say that it's like the environment flashes at them, which is where we coined the term flash sonar. They actually kind of perceive flashes of light. It can be a very emotional, inspiring moment for students who have once seen, who had resigned themselves, essentially, never to be able to see again. And then now they have an experience which registers very much like vision.
That's amazing. So we'll include your website and your links and all that, so and so forth. But can you just, we'll just close with the idea of how is this, you want to redefine sort of the world and the way that people see the visually impaired. What kind of feedback are you getting? I imagine it's very good.
Well, it's mixed, actually. I mean, we have very, very strong pockets of support. We also have a lot of resistance. There are a lot of organizations. There are a lot of elements of society, if you will, who just are not ready for blind people to be free. They're not ready for blind people to claim that degree of freedom, the degree of freedom that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. It really goes in the face of convention. There's very little about our approach that's conventional or traditional. Blindness has a very, very long history of being brushed under the rug, of being denigrated, of being seen as a curse, of being isolated, of being hidden away. And it's only very, very recently, I mean, really within the past 50 years, in only some parts of the world, where blind people have come out and begun to claim their freedom and claim a productive, contributory part of society. And I would say that society, by and large, is just not ready for this. So while we do have certainly very strong pockets of support, we also encounter a great deal of resistance pretty much wherever we go.
Well, we will do our part to spread your message as much as is possible. So thank you very much for speaking with me. I really appreciate you taking the time. This is Johnny B. Truant signing off with Daniel Kish for The Badass Project.